In this episode, we are putting our usual host, Dr. Shir Chewy, into the interview seat to speak on his quality improvement work in the MRI department. Hello, and welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast highlighting physician quality improvement work in northern British Columbia, Canada. We're casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kladlay-Tenay. My name's Deanna Danskin, and I'm a PQI coach that normally helps out behind the scenes of the podcast. But tonight, my colleague Andrea and I will be doing the interviewing.
Thank you, Deanna. We are so excited to have the privilege of interviewing our very own host. I am joining you from the traditional territory of the Treaty 8 peoples. And like Deanna, I'm a PQI coach. We hope you enjoy this episode as much as we will recording it. Take it away, Deanna.
Thanks, Andrea. So, MRI, which stands for magnetic resonance imaging, is a medical imaging technique used to create detailed images of organs and tissues of the body. During an MRI scan, the patient lies inside a tube-shaped magnet. The scanner is loud, and the patient must lie completely still in this very confined space for 20 minutes, but sometimes the scan can take up to an hour or more. This can be both anxiety-inducing and uncomfortable for patients. Any patient movement during the scan can result in lower quality images, which the radiologists, who are the doctors that review the MRIs, will find more difficult to read and interpret. In some cases, when the image quality is very poor, the entire MRI will need to be repeated. This increased cost to the healthcare system and is very inconvenient to the patient and ultimately contributes to longer wait times. At the University Hospital of Northern BC in Prince George, MRI image quality was found to be an issue. Here today to talk about their work addressing this is radiologist Dr. Shir Chewy. Welcome, Dr. Chewy, and by now our listeners would recognize you as the usual host of this podcast. So tonight, we finally get an opportunity to get to know you a little better. I wonder if you can share your journey into medicine with us and tell us how you ended up becoming a radiologist.
Well, thank you, Deanna. So this is not weird or anything, right? Being on the other side of the table. So my journey actually started in the UK, and that's where I grew up. Going right back, my story begins in the late 60s when my parents moved from Malaysia to the UK because my father had an opportunity to study there. And so they dragged me along, 6 months old, at the same time. And then after my father's studies finished, they decided to stay. And they decided to take up citizenship, and we continued to live in the UK. And so I went to school there and did everything that a normal kid would do. My father took a job, actually, interestingly, he was a physicist, for a company called EMI in London, who were at that time building the very, very first CT scanners. And so my father was brought in on this team to help with this work. And so I grew up in the 70s with bits of CT scanner around the house. You can probably think, well, that must have had its influence on me. And as for school, well, as you can probably imagine, being the son of an Asian immigrant family, that Asian work ethic, if you like, was instilled in me from a pretty early age. And so there was a big emphasis on hard work. And for that reason, I guess, schooling was pretty straightforward for me. And I actually thrived in school. I actually enjoyed school. That was fine. I was a complete nerd during school, but that's okay. You know, the nerds hung out together and we enjoyed ourselves, so that was fine. And then in the 80s, my father had an opportunity to change his job and actually move to the US. And my father took a job working with MRI scanners and building MRI scanners into the back of semi-trailers. And I decided that I wanted to finish my studies, my high school, and go to university in the UK. So I was sent off to boarding school, which was fine. And during that time, I had to decide what I wanted to study at university. And I knew that I loved the sciences. I knew that I enjoyed problem solving and helping people. It sort of became a toss-up, really, between maybe engineering or medical school. And in the UK, things are a bit different. You can apply for medical school right out of high school there. So trying to toss up between engineering and medical school, in the end, I think it was actually my slight dislike of maths that swung it for me. I preferred biology. I didn't like maths as much. And so I plumped for medicine and applied, and I was lucky to get a place. So that was how I ended up in medical school. I, thinking back about it, I don't think I actually told my father that. So that may be news to him. I don't know if he's listening. He's 83 now, so if he is, sorry, Dad. It was the math that that did it in for me. And then at medical school, I actually took an interest, not surprisingly, in radiology. And that's what I was absolutely fascinated by. I love the physics. I love the diagnosis, the problem solving, and being able to see the pathology using the technology. And I actually had the opportunity to do an elective in radiology, actually at the Johns Hopkins University in the US. And I spent a month in their medical imaging department. And while I was there, I was completely blown away by the experience. So in Johns Hopkins, this is in the early 90s, 1993, I think, they had six MRI scanners in one hospital. It's completely mind-blowing. My university hospital back in the UK where I was training had one, and here was Johns Hopkins with six. And the experience was amazing, and it really sealed in me a decision to go into radiology, which I did shortly after medical school. So that's my story into radiology. You can almost say from a very young age, it was destiny, but
it was the gadgets lying around the house.
That was probably a big part of it.
Well, I would totally be one of your nerd posse had we gone to high school together. MRIs, out of diagnostic imaging, relies on a team of healthcare professionals to get the desired results. Before we dive into your project, can you tell us about your professional community and the team of healthcare professionals you work with, Dr. Chewy?
Sure, yes. Yeah. So I'm one radiologist in a team of six in the medical imaging or radiology department at UHMBC in Prince George. And that's a medium-sized hospital providing secondary and tertiary care for the whole of the Northern Health region, in fact. And within our department, we have probably about 100 people overall working there. That includes technologists operating various different machines, clerical staff, administrative staff, and the radiologists themselves and some porters. And so we're all a one big team, and we provide the care in the imaging department. And in the MRI department particularly, which is where my project was based, we have one MRI scanner, and we have about 7 to 8 technologists who are trained to operate the scanner. We have a couple of booking clerks, clerical people, and we have a manager who oversees MRI as well as other aspects. So, and then every day there's a radiologist assigned to MRI, and we take it in turns to do that. So that's the MRI department.
It really illustrates the health human resources that it takes to run an imaging department in a modern hospital. I'm just curious, I'm just going off script here. So you had six MRIs at Johns Hopkins. Do you know how many there are in all of Northern Health?
Yeah, well, we have three.
Okay.
We have three. For a long time, it was just one.
Yeah.
And then about 4 years ago, I think it was now, we bought two more, and so we have three, which is great, actually. And that's really transformed access for MRI imaging across the region.
Yeah, that's good to know. So moving on from sort of your history and the place you work now, let's move on to your actual quality improvement project. So as we mentioned in the introduction, MRIs that are of poor quality often need to be repeated, and there's a lot of issues around that. So can you tell me a bit more about why this is specifically a problem, not just for individual patients and radiologists, but also for other providers, and how this ultimately impacts the healthcare system?
Sure. So radiologists, their lifeblood, their life's work, if you like, is interpreting medical images, which are generated by the various scanners and by the technologists in the department. And so we are completely dependent on the quality of the image that we receive to look at, to read, and to interpret. And so if the image quality is low or suboptimal, then that really affects our ability to be able to make the diagnosis, monitor the disease, and help our fellow clinicians in their decision-making. So it is a big problem. And the problem in the MRI that we encountered really, and this is actually a little while ago now, this is sort of pre-pandemic, in that pre-pandemic era, if we can describe it as that. But We had actually replaced our scanner about a year earlier, and we had a brand new scanner. So we replaced our 14-year-old scanner, bought a brand new one, an all-singing, all-dancing scanner. And we had noticed over time that the images that we were getting weren't as great as we were expecting from a brand new scanner. A lot of the images were blurred, and I was the MRI lead at the time, and I was noticing this. And then my colleagues were coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, I think we've got an issue here. A lot of these images are coming out blurred, and it's becoming a real problem. And we're having to call back patients to repeat their scans because the image quality is so poor. And, of course, that's the worst-case scenario, because if you have to repeat a scan, then that's more time for the patient to have to come back. That increases your healthcare cost, as well as everyone's convenience for having to basically repeat something that's already been done. So we realized this was not a great situation, and so something had to be done. And the problem with MRI is that it's very complex. There's a lot of different factors involved in getting a good MRI image. And so there's no one quick fix for something like an issue with image quality. So we actually decided that we would start a QI project in this. And the way we decided, well, the first thing we did, I think, was we wanted to see how big the problem was. So we set up a metric system to gauge how bad the problem was. And we had we introduced a four-point scale where, if you like, number four was the highest, that was the best quality image. And then giving a scan of one was like the lowest quality and would have to be repeated. And there was a couple of levels in between. And the radiologist looked at about 300, 400 scans, and then we graded them according to this scale. And it turned out, and then we converted it to a percentage score, and it turned out that about 82% was the score that we were getting, which was a significant number that were suboptimal and were blurred. And on top of that, about 2% of the scans that we were doing, we were having to repeat. So that's 1 in 50 patients were having to come back and have their scan all over again. And then the next thing we did was we decided to hold a quality improvement event in the department to kick off the project. And in fact, we decided that we would actually do this off-site, take everyone out of the department. We actually held it on a Saturday evening at a local restaurant in their private dining room. And we gave everyone dinner because food just makes everything better, right? It gives everyone this much more positive atmosphere. And the reasoning for doing it off-site is so that everyone could come, right? So otherwise, you always have somebody who's stuck in the scanner having to work a shift. So doing it off-site meant that we could get good attendance. And we explained the problem to the techs. And then we spent some time analyzing the problem using what's called a fishbone diagram, where everyone contributed what they thought were important pieces in improving the quality of images in the MRI scanner. And we came up with about 8 to 10 different areas contributing factors towards image quality in MRI. And then after that, on the Monday morning after that improvement event, I came into the MRI department, and we formally started off the project, and the place was buzzing, right? Because everyone had the weekend to think about all the different little change ideas they were wanting to try and improve all the image quality. And so it got off to a great start, and there were change ideas flying everywhere. They were just trying little things here and there. Maybe it was changing the scan parameters. Maybe it was coaching the patient in the scanner. Maybe it was counting down the scan times. Maybe it was helping patients relax even before they got into the scanner. So many different changes. Just trying them on one patient and then a larger number of patients. And then when something worked, they would like share it and they would spread it. And then they would all adopt it and it would become standard practice. And this is how the project evolved, and it was great to see the techs all get involved and all really buy into the project. So that was really the essence of the project.
I'm wondering, what were the aims of your project, and what did the project involve after you crowdsourced all of these wonderful ideas?
So going back to the original improvement event, which was off-site, the team got together and they decided that they wanted to apply a stretch goal here. And so we knew that the score was coming out at 82%, and they got together and they said, right, we're going to go for 95% image quality, which was, I thought, was pretty ambitious, actually. Anyway, they were all very keen to do this, so that's what we plumped for. At the same time, running parallel to the image quality piece, we also were looking at patients' satisfaction in the MRI unit as well. And we were using questionnaires to generate scores there. And we wanted to try and improve the patient experience as much as we could. And it turned out, actually, the two were very, very, very linked together, actually. The patient satisfaction and the image quality turned out to be intricately linked. So that we chose to keep the same scoring method. We did it. Checked the scores intermittently on a group. The radiologists continued to do the scoring as the project unfolded, and we ran the patient satisfaction scores as well.
Yeah, I think this really illustrates how important it is to have a team and include everyone in developing change ideas. Everyone, whether it's like your technologists or the people doing the clerical. So yeah, that's really great. So you've kind of touched on this a little bit already around the measures of your project. So you've talked a little bit about the percentages, but I wonder if you could expand a bit more specifically on what measures or if any additional measures you did in the project and what you sort of ultimately succeeded with in the end.
The closure came maybe a little bit earlier than we were anticipating, mainly because of the onset of COVID. When we closed it, we ran our final set of data, and I was really pleased to see that they actually reached their target. So we were aiming for 95, and they got 94.7, which was completely amazing.
So that rounds out up to 95.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so it was congratulations all around, and they everyone was very, very pleased. And perhaps more importantly, in fact, that 2% of patients that were coming back for repeat scans, we actually managed to halve that. So we had less than 1% now returning for repeat scans, which was quite an improvement. And when we looked at that 1% saving, and we costed it out in terms of the number of scans that were saved, actually, and then extrapolated across all the scans that we would do in a year, we estimated that we'd saved about $20,000 a year. So that's a significant amount of money, and I think that just goes to show the strength of the project. And in terms of the patient satisfaction, so that was a little different. Our scores actually were always pretty high from patient satisfaction. I don't know whether that's a reflection on the people in Prince George. They're obviously an easygoing bunch of people, but they were they seemed to be continually satisfied with the service. But what we did find in our baseline data was that there were a number of patients who had a really, really awful experience and scored us really, really low, and for whatever reason. And so we actually managed to get feedback from those patients. We managed to find out what the issues were, and then we addressed those with additional change ideas, whether it was the booking system, whether it was in the waiting room. And by the end of the project, we'd pretty much eliminated those low scores. So even though our overall average score had not gone up particularly much, we had eliminated those outlying super low scores. So that was also very, very positive.
Did you encounter any difficulties or challenges going through your prep?
The first difficulty that I encountered was actually quite a pleasant one, was that the staff ran with it, and there were so many change ideas happening all at once, and they all had, you know, things they wanted to try, and they weren't doing what they were told. They weren't documenting it. So we had a big board for the project up on the wall in the MRI office, and we were supposed to be putting all the PDSA change ideas on there, and they weren't filling out the paperwork. So I was trying to keep up with them. I was trying to write out their change ideas for them. And in the end, I think I managed to capture about 12 or 14 of the actual change ideas, but I'm convinced that there was probably about twice as many as that. We just never caught that, and we were never able to document them fully. So that was one difficulty I had. But as I said, that's actually quite a pleasant challenge.
As we move through this, of course, we are the NHPQI program, and PQI supported your project. Could you tell us a little bit about the supports that you received while you were doing your project?
So there was great support, actually. The actual improvement event, and particularly the catering piece, that was funded through a seed grant that came from the Physician Quality Improvement Program. So that was one really, really positive support that we had. And then the other major support was actually in the form of the coach. So the PQI coach involved in this project and who I was working with, Shelley Movall, which I think many of you know, she did an excellent job, kept the project moving. She helped with the data collection. She helped with structuring the improvement event. It was great to have someone to look at the data with, to pick out points in the data and spot those trends. So she was super, and she's very, very knowledgeable as well. So it was great to have her support right next to me running the project as well. And to the credit of Northern Health as well, the manager, particularly in the imaging department, Roma, she did commit actually to helping with the improvement events as well by supporting the techs and actually paying for their time. So they were meeting at a weekend out of the usual working hours, and she agreed to fund that. She agreed to, and that actually resulted in a really, really good turnout at the improvement event, which turned out to be super important. And I hope that Roma was pleased with the outcome, therefore, because she'd invested this money up front. I'm hoping that she was pleased with the recuperation of the 20,000 at the end of the year in save scans, and that she would consider that a good return on investment.
So Roma being involved in that collaboration actually allowed you guys to come to that common goal. What a great way to support each other from the physicians and the multidisciplinary side. We love to hear that.
No, absolutely. And it's really important to have that really key, that positive sponsorship from a manager, from someone in administration who is willing to commit to supporting the project like that. So, yeah, she did a great job.
That's great. It's always great to hear about this. Like Andrea mentioned, collaboration is very important in. We can't really move forward with any quality improvement without that. So as we continue to stay on the topic of quality improvement as a concept, can you tell us, Dr. Chewy, what does quality healthcare mean to you?
So this is interesting. So I'm normally on the other side of the table when people answer this question, right? And
it's a hard question.
I know. Well, my first thought was, well, it's got to be the triple aim, right? It's got to be the Institute of Health Improvement's triple aim. Which is improving the health of populations, reducing healthcare costs, and patient-centered care. And then more recently, we've added to that having that provider experience as well, an improved provider experience, so making it the quadruple aim. And I think that really is the perfect definition. But it is quite a mouthful, and it's a lot to roll out every time. And I'm very much I like catchy little phrases. And so for me, quality healthcare means the right care in the right place at the right time.
So moving on, we wanted to ask you a few questions about the QualityCast North podcast. So our understanding is that the premise for this podcast was initially your idea. So why a podcast? Can you tell us a bit more about what motivated you to initiate a podcast highlighting physician quality improvement in the North?
That's a great question. And really, it all stemmed back to this idea of getting the word out there. Communication is always a challenge, right, and to physicians, and particularly in the North, where we're so geographically dispersed. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to get that word out there. Look, hey, look, we've got these fantastic resources available for learning quality improvement methodology and skills. We've got these wonderful coaches who will come alongside you and help you do quality improvement. And we've got all these physicians who are actually doing it. They're actually stepping out, they're picking up the skills, and they're dipping a toe in the water, and they're doing projects, small and large. And look, some of them are right near you. They're just around the corner from you. And so I wanted to get that message out. But how do you do that? And so my thought was, well, a podcast is the perfect medium for that, right? Because nearly everyone listens to podcasts. You know, whether it's at the gym or on a walk or in the car on the way to work, you know, you can download a podcast. So it seemed like a very, very natural medium. And you know what? It's something that I'd never done before. And so I was interested in learning that skill. I was interested in trying it out and giving it a whirl. And so it remains to be seen. I mean, we only have a limited number of episodes out yet. It remains to be seen whether it'll be a success. But maybe come and ask me that when we've done our 100th episode. How about that?
So optimistic.
I would love to make it to 100 episodes as well. With the podcast, we've had so much fun bringing this to you. But I still have another question for Dr. Chewy. With all of your quality improvement work, the podcast, and as well as your busy radiology practice, what do you do to stay well and avoid burnout? That's a lot of priorities.
Yes, and this is also a very, very good question. And I've really been quite impressed by a lot of the answers we've had from our guests about this. And so I had to think hard about what I do and how it applies to me. And I think for me, it's all about developing a strategy. So over the last maybe 5-6 years or so, I've actually moved away from considering this a problem of time management towards thinking about it as a problem of time and energy management. And the way I see it is that you take on all these commitments, they may be work-related, they may be teaching, there may be committees, they may be outside work in volunteering in the community, for example, family commitments. And they all have varying demands on your time and energy. And not only that, but they're also cyclical. They go up and there are periods when it's much more intensive, and then there are pit troughs where it's less intensive. And what you find most of the time is that the troughs and the peaks, they balance themselves out and things are mainly manageable, right? But every now and again, you get a week or a month where all the peaks come at the same time. And suddenly, you know, there's this huge demand on your time and energy, and you're struggling, right? But you manage to get through it because, you know, it's temporary. The peak's going to subside. And you know, you can see it coming in your calendar, and so you can get through it. And at the same time, maybe the next month, you actually get all the troughs that actually coincide, right? And you get these periods which are just super quiet, and there's nothing much happening. You're twiddling your thumbs, and you're thinking, oh, there's nothing going on here. And the key I've learned is that when those troughs happen, and you're twiddling your thumbs, that's the time to relax. That's the time to twiddle your thumbs, right? That's the time to recuperate your energy and top up the batteries. And you really need to be doing very, very little. And that's the key, I think.
So take those opportunities for rest. I think that a lot of people struggle with that. So I think that's very good advice, Dr. Chewy. So our interview is coming to a close, but we just have one final question. We ask everyone this, but it's always great to hear people's answers. So what do you enjoy about living and working in Northern BC?
Yeah, we love it here, actually. We moved here in 2008. We came originally, my wife, I, and our two kids, in 2008. And we thought, well, we'll give it a couple of years and maybe we'll move somewhere else, right? And 13 years later, we're still here. It's great. We love it. I think Prince George, we like it here. It's a Goldilocks type of town, right? It's not too big and it's not too small. It's just the right size. It's big enough to have everything that you need, right? It's got its symphony, it's got its theatres, it's got a university, it's got all the clubs and sporting activities that you could possibly want. And at the same time, it's small enough that there's very little traffic, that property is inexpensive, that you're a stone's throw from the great outdoors, right? In half an hour, I live in the town, and in half an hour drive, I could be on a lake outside town in my canoe fishing. You know, that's just wonderful. So I think there's that element as well. So it's that, and the other thing is that the people, because it's quite small, because it's quite a close-knit community, there's a good, very strong community feel here, and I think that's the people are lovely. I miss the people. If I travel elsewhere in the province or in Canada, I'm always pleased to come back and to Prince George. So that I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, excellent.
So that's all we have for today's episode. Thank you again for joining us here. It's been great having you in the guest chair this week. We have begged you, and we're grateful that you said yes. Until next time, this is Andrea Goodine, Deanna Danskin, and Dr. Sheer Chewy. Thank you for joining us for this episode of QualityCast North. We're supported by the Northern Health Physician Quality Improvement Initiative. This podcast has been produced by Dr. Sheer Chewy, Andrea Goodine, and Deanna Danskin. Recording and productions is done on site at Blake Productions. Editing, sound, and technical support have been provided by Matt Walker of Blake Production. Original music was created, performed, and recorded by Daniel Chewy. Artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Show notes and other information about the Northern Health Physician Quality Improvement Program is available on our website, nhpqi.ca.